Chief Judge Baker, members of the court, good morning. I'm Captain Brian Sullivan, and I, along with Captain Nick Larson, represent the appellant in this case. The Army Court was incorrect for concluding that ammunition qualifies as an explosive. The text of the rule, the plain meaning and use of the terms, and ultimately the context of this rule, reveal at best for the government an unclear case that a round of ammunition qualifies as an explosive. Now, as to the first point, the definition is ambiguous as applied to appellant's case because the definition does not include the charged term. The definition says explosives means gunpowders among an exhaustive list of other items. It doesn't say explosives means ammunition. And while gunpowder is a component of ammunition, ammunition is its own thing. And as the Ninth Circuit warned the government in Thompson, the government cannot confuse an aspect of a thing with the thing itself. And the president not including ammo in the RCM here is especially persuasive in a way that it isn't for the rest of society. Every person subject to the UCMJ handles ammunition, many on a regular basis.
Are you saying that ammo can never be an explosive, or it was not in this case?
Your Honor, it certainly was not in this case. The small arms ammunition is not an explosive in this case.
Could small arms ammunition be an explosive?
No, Your Honor, it could not.
So if I took X number of rounds and put a detonator on it and blew it up, that would not be an explosive?
That would, Your Honor, but I think what you've got there is you don't just have ammunition. You've got ammunition plus a device that is configured to cause damage using an explosive effect. And here, what you have is...
Isn't that what a round is?
Your Honor, a round of ammunition...
Look at Graham. Graham said one round in the context of Graham wasn't explosive. Bang. He shot it. Bang. You don't have one round here. You got 1,800 rounds. The court in Graham itself recognized that quantum made a difference. You know, we're dealing here in Graham with one round. Said... Other situations might be different. Why isn't this different? You got 1,800 rounds.
Just to be clear, is it 5,000 rounds or is it 1,800?
It's 5,000.
It's 5,000.
Close to 5,000.
I stand corrected. You got 5,000 rounds.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Now, certainly, the number here drastically different than that in Graham. But you have individual rounds that are configured to be used individually.
Now, but here they've been collected into one location or two locations, depending if you see this as the linked and the non-linked.
Yes, Your Honor.
So if you set them on fire, they'd explode, right?
Your Honor, certainly if all these rounds were set on fire, they would make a lot of noise.
They'd explode.
And the gunpowder within it would explode. It smells of sulfur, it makes a loud noise.
How do you deal with 844J A device that is in such proportions, quantities, or packing that ignition by fire, by friction, or by detonation of the compound mixture or device or any part thereof may cause an explosion.
Your Honor, that's a challenge.
Why isn't that a pile of ammo?
That's a challenge, and that right there is certainly a catch-all. And under a broad limitless definition, that could apply. But there is ambiguity.
Could apply, so then why doesn't it?
Now, Your Honor, the Army Court's decision, 8 judges, don't mention that. The government tells you in their brief that doesn't even apply. And I think, you know...
Well, I'm asking you why it does or does not apply.
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, I think if you look at the intent of the rule, now, I understand we're not going to get to intent behind the rule without finding some ambiguity based on the definition first. But I'm going to jump right there and say, if you look to the intent behind this rule, where the president takes a definition right from a federal statute, the Explosives Control Act, where Congress was concerned with the social harm, not from shootings, but from bombings in the 60s and 70s, and the president taking that definition from the federal statute, and then referencing that very same federal statute in the RCM, the president is indicating that he's concerned that what he's doing with just this small rule is he is concerned with the social harm resulting from bombings, not from shootings. And I think that's especially important in the military, Your Honor, because, as I stated, every person in the military that this rule applies to handles ammunition, and yet the president leaves that definition out. If he was concerned about the effect of ammunition, he would have included it in the definition. Now, in Yates, the dissent says that you use catch-alls for known unknowns. There, the term was tangible object. It's a catch-all. Now, here we have a known object that is used often and frequently by members of the military. It's not a catch-all, and yet the president leaves it out. So I believe that that should be persuasive to this court, that the president intended that ammunition not be included. And if this court doesn't want to go that far, at the very least, that serves as some ambiguity, especially here.
Why didn't they just not list ammo because they thought that it was clearly encompassed both within 844J and within the RCM?
Your Honor, I mean, I believe that...
And what do you do about 844G2?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I don't have G2.
The provisions of this subsection should not be applicable to the possession of ammo in an airport, right? And then
yes, Your Honor.
Just checked his baggage. So doesn't that suggest that all other ammo is included?
Yes, Your Honor. You know, if we get, now, RCM does reference 844, the definition of explosives, just that subsection. Now, deeper in that federal statute, we do have that part of the statute which says that ammunition is excluded. Now, the Second Circuit.
In one particular circumstance.
Yes, Your Honor.
Which, by implication, would suggest it is included, otherwise included.
Well, Your Honor, I think that the RCM references just the definition of explosives, and then in a separate section of the federal statute, it does list out that exception where it notes ammunition. And the Second Circuit grapples with that and ultimately concludes that, you know, maybe this was included in an abundance of caution. And I believe here the President, in referencing the definition of explosives, did he consider another subsection within that statute there? Possibly. But at the very least, Your Honor, I believe that that's grounds for ambiguity here.
Counsel, what's the effect of the guilty plea in this case? I mean, the military judge at least once read him the correct definition. There was quite a exchange several times between the military judge and the accused as to what the meaning of explosives was, and once he said, yeah, sure, I know what this is. I work with this stuff. This is an explosive. In the context of a guilty plea, it seems that that may be enough.
Your Honor, I'm sure this court sees every day accused who go into a guilty plea and say what they need to say to get the deal. And not only do we have that here, but we have the military judge himself being confused and noting at Joint Appendix 26, he says, I don't know if ammunition is an explosive. I need some sort of documentation. He notes that confusion. Trial counsel shows up with an Army regulation, which defines a term explosive ordnance, different than the term in the RCM. And then the military judge says, Murphy, is this an explosive? Oh, shucks, yes, sir, it is.
Well, I mean, can't that be construed as the military judge finding an inconsistency and then trying to resolve that inconsistency? And your client went along with it one step at a time, and not only his attorney, but he himself. And he himself seemed not to reference the statutory definitions, but he relied upon his own experience in working with ammunition.
He being appellant, Your Honor?
Yes.
You know, the colloquy here is pretty short. And appellant admits that ammunition is an explosive, you know, word for word, how it's stated in the element. And the military judge says, well, just to be sure that you know that, look at the regulation, which, oh, by the way, is not consistent with the definition in the RCM, and could potentially be a substantial basis to question the provenance of appellant's plea. So certainly that's an issue that this court has to grapple with, but I don't think appellant gets into enough why he believes ammunition is an explosive based on his experience. He states a flat-out conclusion and ultimately references a regulation which has a different definition than that in the RCM.
So should we be looking at this from a plea provenance perspective or just a straight legal sufficiency perspective?
Your Honor, I think legal sufficiency primarily, but I think this court
and why not plea provenance?
Well, Your Honor, first of all, that wasn't the issue I was asked to write on, Your Honor, but I believe that that certainly is something to look at. I believe that legal sufficiency is my stronger argument, not only because of the text of the definition, but also because of the plain and ordinary meaning of the terms. And the Supreme Court recently looked at this in Bond. And the court, after considering federalism implications, look to a fair reading of the Chemical Weapons Implementation Treaty Act and the definition of chemical weapon. And the court said that despite a very broad statutory definition, despite the fact that Ms. Bond's use of chemicals to burn her husband's mistress met the broad statutory definition, no, quote, educated user of English, no speaker of natural parlance would describe Bond's crime as using a chemical weapon. And here
are
we have...
Are you suggesting that no educated user of English would describe a round as an explosive?
No, Your Honor, and no soldier would do as well. A soldier with a round of ammunition or 1,000 rounds of ammunition or 10,000 rounds, let's say, in his assault pack, as we had here in this case, would say that he is armed with an explosive. He is carrying ammunition. And, you know, something else I think that's instructive here is that the president got after the social harm of bombings with explosives. The social harm from ammunition, no doubt, is great.
Well, wait, is the purpose in the military, the theft of military property, isn't that directed at multiple societal interests and not just the prevention of certain crimes?
Yes, Ron. I think that there certainly is a disruption to military duties that needs to be considered as well. And I think here, just looking at the harm to the public, ammunition, the harm to the public, no doubt is great.
And harm to military readiness.
Yes, Your Honor.
And so might the president wish to have a broad definition so that military members don't take it upon themselves to decide what to take and when to take it, which might impact military readiness?
Yes, Your Honor, he might. But I think that argument also helps appellant. Because if the loss of ammunition or the loss of equipment is that great of a disruption to military readiness, ammunition is a key item to our duties, especially as soldiers. And that item is staring the president in the face when he's crafting this definition of explosives in 103.11, and yet he leaves it out. And, Your Honor,
unless he assumes it's intuitively within.
Yes, Your Honor.
And is that term ammunition used anywhere else in the code?
No, Your Honor, it's not.
And so getting to what the Chief Judge says, you were talking at the beginning of your argument about how every service member has access to ammunition. I think we all agree that ammunition is highly sensitive. The fact that it's never mentioned in the code, might that indicate that the president felt as if explosives covered that?
Your Honor, certainly that is a possibility. But again, I don't believe that you can that an aspect of an object can be confused with the object itself. Ammunition is its own thing. And if it is so crucial, to readiness as it is, it should be so obvious to the president as the commander-in-chief that if it really is that sensitive, that the president should include it in the definition somewhere. He chose not to do so. And also, you know, Your Honor, as I noted, the intent behind this rule in 103.11 was to deal with bombings. And Gelb noted that when referencing the legislative history behind the Explosives Control Act. And that's very, very important. And ultimately, Your Honor, the rule of lenity here weighs heavily in favor of appellant. In Yates, the Supreme Court said, if the traditional tools of statutory construction leave any doubt about the meaning of the term, the Supreme Court said it would invoke the rule that ambiguity concerning the ambit of criminal statutes be resolved in the favor of the
plaintiff. They would have to agree with you in the first instance if there was an ambiguity, right, to apply that rule?
Yes, Your Honor. Now, again, I believe there is an ambiguity based in the inclusion of some terms can mean the exclusion of others, especially given the importance of ammunition to the military mission, the fact that every soldier deals with it, and yet the president left it out. And also the plain meanings of the term, in that no soldier would consider holding a round of ammunition means that he is armed with an explosive. So I think that's enough ambiguity in the text to get you to the intent behind the rule, and the intent behind the rule shows that this is intended to deal with explosives, and intended to deal with bombings, not shootings. And ultimately, I think that gets you to the rule of lenity. And here, there exists no such clarity.
Is that your ultimate argument?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah, invoke lenity.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And I believe that it's possible, looking at just the text of the rule, for you to believe that the president intended that it be excluded. But if this court doesn't want to go that far, ultimately, ambiguity, given the terms.
If we find, as Judge Ryan said, if we find ambiguity.
Yes, Your Honor. You do have to find ambiguity. But in light of it, I believe this court should. And if they do, you know, ultimately the lack of clarity in this rule results in service members being subjected to the same 10-year maximum punishment, whether they steal a JDAM or ultimately under the Army Court's ruling, whether they steal one single round of blank ammunition. That is an absurd result. And given the ambiguity in this rule and its context, this court should rule in favor of appellant. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the government.
Chief Judge Baker, judges of the court, my name is Captain Annie Shea, and I, along with Major Stephen Collins, represent the government in this matter. The Army Court of Criminal Appeals correctly found that ammunition can, and in this case, does fall within the sentence aggravator for an explosive in Articles 108 and 121 of the UCMJ. This reading is supported by, one, the plain language of the RCM definition, the surrounding framework of the rules at hand, and third, the purpose of the sentence aggravators as provided by the President. Now, the RCM definition in RCM 10311 lists a broad range of items, which includes gunpowders, smokeless powders. It also has language in other clauses that state similar device, which is a catch-all. And the definition here is unambiguous as to whether or not gunpowders are included. By a matter of simple logic, ammunition that contains gunpowders or smokeless powders, and including the 5.56 millimeter rounds in this case, or otherwise meets this definition, is an explosive.
Counsel,
yes,
let's take a look at that definition. And as I understand your argument in this context, the ammunition is an explosive because it contains gunpowder.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. But if we look at what they're listing in 10311, they include explosive bomb, grenade, missile, or similar device, or incendiary bomb or grenade, firebomb, or similar device. Now, it seems that all of those contain gunpowder. They are a device that contains gunpowder. Ammunition is a device that contains gunpowder. Isn't the fact that they list out those particular items contain gunpowder but exclude ammunition an indication that the President didn't mean to include ammunition?
Well, Your Honor, if you look at this definition, there looks to be at least three clauses. The first, which starts from gunpowders and goes until smokeless powders, comes word for word from Section 844J of Title 18. The second clause is any explosive bomb, grenade, missile, or similar device, and any incendiary bomb or grenade, firebomb, or similar device. That comes from Section 232.5, which is a civil disorders code and chapter in Title 18. And then you have this catch-all that says any other compound mixture or device which isn't explosive within the meaning of 18 U.S.C. Sections 232.5 and Section 844J. Now, when the President enacted this provision in 1984, it was several years after both the Gun Control Act and the Explosive Control Act came into effect in 1968 and 1970. There's actually two definitions of explosives in the Explosive Control Act. The President opted to go for this one, which several circuit courts have noted.
Now, when you say he opted to go for this one, which one? I mean, we have
I'm sorry.
We have at least three of them in front of us here.
Oh, yes, Your Honor. He opted. So in the Explosive Control Act, you have Section 841 Delta, which is a regulatory definition of explosives. It's a narrow definition. And then you have 844J, which is what the President opted to put into this definition here or incorporate by reference. Now, several circuit courts have noted that 844J is a much more expansive meaning. It doesn't limit it as 841 does by the primary purpose or the intended usage or the function by explosion, which is the language that's in 841 Delta.
But that doesn't answer my specific question. I mean, you're moving us now into 844,
yes, Your Honor,
which I agree is a good argument for the government. But if we're just looking at the text in the Uniform Code of Military Justice, which is what we have to look at first, it seems that there is a list of devices that contain gunpowder, and that list does not contain ammunition.
Yes, Your Honor.
And so what I need is an explanation as to why you think that, why it doesn't contain it, and why even though it doesn't contain it, it still applies.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, the government's position is that there's an inference, right, that the gunpowder here is listed very broadly. So it doesn't matter how it's packaged. It's typically used as a propellant in ammunition, and it's just subsumed into that term alone. The government does recognize that this definition does not explicitly include ammunition. It also doesn't explicitly exclude it, nor does it include any limiting language as to the packaging or quantity of that gunpowder.
Just to be clear, is the government's view that ammunition is a device, or is it merely the fact that it contains gunpowder? Which aspect of the definition are you relying on?
Well, Your Honor, for this particular case, and what the Army Court correctly found, is that ammunition is an explosive in this case because it contains gunpowder, because an aspect of it contains an explosive material that is expressly listed in this definition.
Well, However, would they single out gunpowder as the one, ammo is the one thing not to list explicitly? I don't think you've still answered Judge Erdman's question.
Well, Your Honor,
maybe you can't.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, Your Honor, just because a certain
term... It's subsumed, it's implied.
Yes, Your Honor. And, you know, this definition doesn't include things like, it doesn't say the term blasting cap, which is clearly an explosive. It doesn't include detonation cord, which these are all common materials, explosive materials that the military uses. These terms are not...
blasting materials.
It does say blasting materials, and that is precisely where it would fall under. So simply because that actual term is not expressly listed doesn't mean the President intended to exclude it.
It seems you have two arguments here, at least two. One is that because there's gunpowder, it's an explosive. The other is if we go to 844J, the definition there is more expansive and could seemingly include ammunition. And those seem to be kind of separate arguments. Is that an accurate analysis? And if so, which is the better one for you?
Yes, Your Honor. I think the stronger one here is just that ammunition contains gunpowder. However, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, however, I think that the intent behind this definition was to be expansive. So ammunition could very well qualify as an explosive under alternate theories.
Counsel, do you have a position with respect to how the inclusion of, or I should say, the exclusion of ammunition under a certain condition in 844G2A, what that tells us or doesn't tell us as to whether ammunition was included within the definition?
Well, Your Honor, this was discussed in United States versus Graham by the Second Circuit. They had rejected that argument by the government at the time, but there's
fine.
An inference.
I'm asking you what you think.
Well, I think it's a reasonable inference to make that when Congress enacted that particular act, they did intend to include ammunition by putting expressly a limitation in a particular subsection.
Is the government here today arguing that 5,000 rounds of ammunition falls within the definition of explosive, or is it also arguing that a single round of ammunition is an explosive?
Your Honor, based off of the plain language of the definition, the quantity doesn't matter. So if the ammunition itself contains gunpowder, as it did in this case, it is an explosive. And
so a single 22 round, in the government's view, is an explosive?
If it contains gunpowder, yes, Your Honor. Just as a single blast.
Think most armors would agree with that?
Well, I don't know what the armors would agree to. Possibly not, Your Honor. But the government is not saying that ammunition and explosives are the same thing here. They're obviously distinct sort of items. We're talking about for the purposes of the sentence aggravator. Where the question is what the President intended to escalate a sentence for property-based crimes. So we have to look at more than just simple language and just common meaning. We need to resort to
what
other...
What protects the soldier gets off the firing line and he walks away with a round in his pocket.
Well,
he's going to get in a lot of trouble one way or the other, but according to you, I believe the government's going to charge him with a 10-year sentence aggravator for walking away with an explosive in his pocket. So the only thing that protects him is prosecutorial discretion?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. I mean, if he walks away and it's just by neglect, there's no sentence aggravator for neglectfully failing to secure a round of ammunition.
He brings it home as a souvenir. He shot expert for the first time in his career. He's taken the one round home as a souvenir.
Possibly,
so
Your Honor.
Now you're going to get him for 10 years?
Well, not necessarily 10 years, Your Honor. His sentencing exposure has increased, so certainly the maximum, the sentencing authority now has a wider range to work with as far as this aggravating factor. However, we do rely on our sentencing authorities to give what we think is appropriate sentence, and likely he would not get the 10 years for a single round.
Does the fact that this was a guilty plea factor into the analysis at all? Should we be looking at this, or is this strictly a legal sufficiency issue?
Well, I think it's a related but a separate issue here. We're looking at both the case and we're looking at the legal question at hand, which is whether or not this court finds that ammunition that contains gunpowder or smokeless powders is an explosive.
Is there a limit, getting back to the Chief Judge's question? I mean, the powder in a round of ammunition, even in a NATO 5.56 round, is well under an ounce.
Yes, Your Honor.
So, I mean, if you have 2 or 3 grains of gunpowder, is that sufficient in a device, in some type of a device?
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, from this language, there really is no limitations as far as quantity. So if you have an ounce of C4, if that's what appellant stole, that would be an explosive. That would trigger that sentence aggravator. And it appears from resorting to all the other tools of statutory construction, that's what the president intended. And again, the appellant was talking about the president's intent and that there's a social harm. And certainly, the president isn't concerned, as Congress is, with the social harm that is created when these items are wrongfully taken or disposed of. However, we have an additional interest here. The military the president's also concerned about the impact of military operations and readiness. I mean, this is expressly discussed, actually, in the analysis of punitive articles by the drafters here, that there's basically at least a twofold interest that the government has. It is the threat to the community that's posed by the larceny of these items, as well as the destruction of military activities. And ammunition falls squarely within that intent. Now, to the extent that the court may find ambiguity, because ammunition is not expressly listed in this definition, we should resort to looking at the surrounding language and framework. So there's several principles of statutory construction that this court can rely on. One is nociter associis. We can look, first of all, at the RCM definition itself, and then at the sentence aggravator. When we look at the RCM definition, we see that there's several companion terms that are known as low explosives. They don't necessarily have a substantial explosive effect, as appellant argued. Gunpowder, by definition, defurgates, has a very low detonation velocity. It is intended to be used as a propellant. It does not necessarily have a substantial explosive effect. You also look at the sentence aggravator using this principle, and you see that in almost every instance in the MCM, explosive, that term, is coupled with the term firearm. Now, firearm in RCM 103.12 is defined as any weapon that discharges by virtue of an explosive. Now, the Army Court reasoned that if ammunition is what firearms discharge, and ammunition provides this explosive, by, again, simple logic, it must be an explosive. Also, the court earlier noted that the term ammunition is actually not listed anywhere in the MCM. Instead, it's firearm and explosive, when we very well understand the importance and significance of ammunition to the military and the government.
Do we know why they just didn't charge this as being government property with a value of over $500, which would get them to the same sentence enhancer?
Your question is, do we know why it wasn't charged
as
that? I do not know why, Your Honor. Now, appellant had earlier talked about how this creates an absurd result. I believe we've discussed it to some extent. I would, again, first point out that if we look at what really is happening here, we're really maximizing the possible maximum sentence. But it doesn't take the same effect that most sentence escalators do in federal or state law, which is raising the minimum sentence. Here, again, we're just giving a broader range, a broader sentence exposure for the sentencing authority to work with. Now, appellant also relies primarily on federal case law, but this court has recognized that the military and civilian criminal justice systems are separate as a matter of law. And so even though we may look to civilian statutes for guidance, then the day we're trying to decide what the president intended to do here with the sentence aggravator. If we look at the federal statutes, we see that Congress does control all these items. Certainly, in primarily two separate acts, the Firearms Control Act and the Explosives Control Act. But they do control firearms, ammunition, and explosives. It seems odd that the president would likewise not want to control or want to exclude ammunition from the sentence aggravator in that case. Pending your further questions, in light of the above, this court should affirm the findings and sentence in this case and the decision of the lower court.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the appellant now has the opportunity for rebuttal.
Chief Judge Baker, three quick points. Judge Erdman, to your point about the associated terms and the definition, under Yates, this is the starting point when interpreting the definition. And as you noted, the terms in the definition of explosives are those with substantial explosive effect: missiles, incendiary bomb, fire bomb, explosive bombs. Context again reveals that the president did not contemplate every type of explosion, only those that caused a particular harm to the public. And that's what's clear in this rule.
Which way does that cut? Here you got a substantial amount. Doesn't that get rid of the de minimis argument?
No, Your Honor, it does not. Because
why not?
You have a substantial amount of ammunition.
Yep.
But you have ammunition that's required to be used with a firearm that's already controlled. There's already a sentence aggravator in place that controls firearms. And the round itself causes harm through use with a firearm, such that it builds sufficient velocity that it can travel outside the firearm. All those other substances listed, Your Honor, have substantial explosive effect. And as the court said in Thompson, the explosive effect is what directly causes the harm with those substances, unlike with ammunition. And Chief Judge Baker, as to your hypo that you offered to me early on in my argument, which was a powerful one, where you noted that what happens if you took thousands of rounds of ammunition and stuck it around a detonator?
Around a fire.
Yes, Your Honor. You know, what matters here is the form and the configuration of the property at the time it's stolen, at the time it is disposed of. Now, certainly in the future, folks could do other things with those objects, but what matters is at the time aspiration is complete, at the time he sells them, what is their form? At the time that appellant disposed of and stole the property, it was in the form of ammunition. And finally, if this court were to uphold ACCA's ruling, as you all noted, a single round of ammunition, even a single blank round of ammunition, would subject a service member to a 10-year maximum punishment. And that is an absurd result, especially here, as you noted, Judge Erdman, that a viable sentence aggravator existed. The value of the property that got them the very same maximum punishment.
Exactly. And I believe your client admitted in the inquiry that it was worth more than $500.
In the stipulation of fact.
In the stipulation of fact. Wasn't that scotch this whole issue?
Your Honor, it wasn't in the charge sheet.
Well, in Cotton, the Supreme Court seemed to say, so what?
Your Honor, I don't believe it was talked about during the colloquy as well. And the theory on which the government pursued at trial and on the charge sheet was that this was an explosive. And when a viable alternative exists, Your Honor, the government needs to have some reason. Creative charging decisions on unsturdy ground is not what should lead the day here. And as the Supreme Court said, before we choose the harsher alternative penalty, we require Congress speak in a language that is clear and definite. And this court should rule the same, and find that ammunition is not an explosive. Pending any further questions, that concludes my presentation.
I thank you, counsel. The court thanks both counsel for your arguments, and the case is now submitted, and we'll stand in recess until 10 minutes from now. We'll stand in recess until 10 minutes from now. Thank you very much.